Good morning, everyone. Welcome. It's FBC Radio Live. It's Monday, November the 7th, 2022. And we had a very interesting Sunday in the NFL yesterday. And I don't want to be a little over dramatic, John, but I think Tom Brady and the Buccaneers saved their season yesterday in their last second come from behind win. And for anyone out there like me, who is what people call a Brady honk, that was vintage Tom in a situation that I think a lot of people that watch this Buccaneers team have been screaming about for quite some time, because it's amazing what works for them on offense, and it's quite obvious, and it's not what the coaches have really voiced publicly over the last couple of weeks, and it's throwing the ball. And it doesn't mean abandoning the run completely, but using more strategic approaches to running the game and not making it the focal point. Because we saw yesterday in multiple instances, and mostly there in the final drive, the Buccaneers offense is at its very best when Tom Brady's orchestrating it completely. And we saw yet again last night why, he's just the greatest of all time, and just another notch on his belt yesterday.
The thing about Brady, to a lesser degree, Rodgers, and I know we're going to talk about him a little bit later, he was god-awful yesterday, but with Brady and Rodgers, I've always felt that they play much better in an up-tempo because of their brain, you know, how much they've seen over the years, how they know how to diagnose defenses. And we saw that in the last drive, right? That was an up-tempo drive out of necessity. You only had, 44 seconds remaining, and you had to go 60 yards. You had to score a touchdown. No problem. It's not like he's never done that before. It's probably 100 times we've seen him do that. It may not even be exaggerating. So I think that's what you have to do with the veteran quarterback. Take advantage of their strengths. Like, don't make them cookie cutter quarterbacks where here comes the play from the sideline and then he's got to check that band on his wrist and then everybody else is not on the same page. Like, let these guys cook. We heard about Russell Wilson was going to cook in Seattle or wherever, now in Denver. So yeah, that now they're 4-5. They're tied with Atlanta. They hold a tiebreaker. If New Orleans wins tonight, they're right in there as well. You can tell by his reaction and even his press conference after the game, that looked to be the happiest he's been all year. You know, he's hugging Brian Leftwich. He's in the press conference going, that was awesome. Like, you can just tell that he felt himself yesterday. So yeah, maybe they can carry this into a little bit of a winning streak, win that division. And I've said this before, they win the division, they're home for a wild card game. If they win that one, they will go on the road to face somebody, and they will have that team shaking in their boots because of him.
Yeah. Oh, and look, I mean, you can even say everything you said about the last drive, the drive before, because the last drive wouldn't have been necessary had Scotty Miller not dropped that pass couldn't have been softer floating into Scotty Miller's chest than it was, but he dropped it. And again, this is an issue that was a problem a year ago for the Buccaneers. And it's also been an issue this year, because I don't know exactly where they stood heading into the week in terms of drops. But they added six more yesterday, which again is going to very likely put them near the very top of the list again. But you're right though. You could see sort of that just relief come over them, especially Brady, and just to your point, just kind of looking like, the everything that led up to what happened the week before against the Ravens, and then of course the day after announcing his divorce was finalized, and everything that's happened since, it just kind of feels like that was we can breathe because the losing streak is over. They've kind of stopped the bleeding for right now. And look, the reality of it is they found stuff that have worked. Now, the biggest issue for me, and this is obviously still a concern until I see it consistently, is are the coaches going to see it? Are the coaches going to commit to what really works? And it's not necessarily running the ball on early downs to set up the play action. And it's not doing it necessarily with Leonard Fournette, who, I mean, I think he's been okay this season, but at times pretty ineffective. And I think they get a little bit more out of Rashad White from that role as a running back, because I think he has more of an ability as a pass catcher as well. So huge win for the Buccaneers. And again, I don't think it's over dramatic to say that it might have saved their season, and not in literal sense because, you know, based on the division, I feel like it would have taken a long time for them to be out of it. But from a contextual and from a confidence standpoint, that was a huge win for that team and something they needed that I'm sure is going to make the flight over to Germany next week, Deutschland, quite better than what it would have been had they lost their fourth game in a row.
Now you get to face the high-flying Seattle Seahawks, leaders of the NFC West,
yes,
right? Who are 6-3. And isn't this amazing? I think this kind of sums up the NFL season so far as we're at the midway point, Ian. The two hottest offenses in the NFL scoring the most points over the last three games. Number one, the Seattle Seahawks. Number two, the Chicago Bears. They're the two best offenses in football the last 3 weeks. In my lifetime, and look, I'm 59 years old, I can't recall ever when the Chicago Bears offense was actually better than its defense. Well, that's the case now. They've actually become kind of a fun team to watch. You know, I know they lost yesterday 35-32, and Justin Fields is running all over the place, and he's making progress as a thrower of the football. But, yeah, it's going to be a tough matchup for Tampa going overseas to face a Seattle team that's playing at a really high level, surprisingly.
Yeah, well, not surprising to me, John.
Not to you.
Not to me, John.
That was one of your
– I've been a bit of a – oh, I don't know. What do you want to call it? Sage, so to speak. You know, wise man. You know, I've been.
You're too young to be a sage. I think you're too young for that.
I'm working on it. The question I asked a few weeks ago was this the best team in the NFC West? And again, you can even put them in an argument for best team in the NFC. I wouldn't do that yet, but between that and again, by jumping on the play calling very early, John, I got receipts from early September about me complaining about the Bucs play calling and not the injuries or anything else. Just that's the biggest concern, and that was a couple months ago. And now everyone's kind of jumping on that bandwagon, and for good reason, too. I mean, we've seen what works. Again, like I said, I keep going back to that game. On the flip side, though, John, and this is something that we had to talk about today, and stark comparison or contrast rather to Brady and the Buccaneers are the Packers and Aaron Rodgers. Mm-hmm. And look, I think the guy is injured, but you said it, he just was not good yesterday. And we've defended him, and I think he's earned a lot of slack and certainly deserves a lot of leeway when it comes to maybe some poor play here and there. But yesterday was bad, and you know, I'm not going to say that, oh, it's because of the injury. I do think he's something's wrong with him physically. I just don't see. I'm not going to assume, John, that it's some physical decline that happened overnight. I'm just not going to do that. So I do think he's a little banged up. But I mean, that interception on the goal line was horrendous. I mean, that was one of the worst ones you're going to see all season because it was. I mean. Bakhtiari, of all people, were wide open. Well, were you going to say which one? I'm talking about the Bakhtiari one. The David Bakhtiari one where he's a lineman, but he had, I mean, the entire left half of the end zone completely wide open, and he had, I can't believe I'm saying this, he had a step on his defender, and it was, as Rodgers said it himself, was 6 yards underthrown, and he was right. It was just bad. Yeah. So I guess I'll throw it to you, and I say this in an endearing fashion, our Aaron Rodgers expert, and basically because you obviously watch and pay attention to him more than I do, but are you concerned that it's a physical drop-off, an injury, or is this just it for Aaron Rodgers, and this is kind of where we're at? Because I think we can agree that the Packers aren't going to make the playoffs this year. I don't see... yesterday was a... There's no guarantee even if they won that game, they would have been in a good place to really make a run. Losing that game in the fashion in which they did, I see no path for them to get to the postseason. This is a lost season for them. The question is it a lost season / end of an era for Aaron Rodgers?
No, I think a few things. I'm sure the thumb is an issue, but he can play through that. I think one thing about Aaron Rodgers is he's physically tough. He's come back from broken collarbones on two occasions earlier than he was supposed to. I think he is a gamer in that sense. But one of my criticisms of him is he's always been kind of a front runner. So now 3-6, is he going into the building? Is he going to rally the troops and get them ready to take on the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday, which should be an interesting game because it's the return of Mike McCarthy to Lambeau Field. So if the Packers can't be fired up for that and Rodgers really sold on that, then they've really got some issues there as well. Ian, this is a guy who doesn't throw interceptions, right? Yesterday, he threw his 100th career interception. 100 interceptions. The guy's been playing full-time since 2008.
Yeah.
I think it's 15th year. I mean, he doesn't throw interceptions. Yesterday, threw three of them, two in the red zone. The third one came when Green Bay snapped the ball at Detroit 22. You could call that a red zone interception if you want. I mean, if you want to split hairs there. He goes years without throwing red zone interceptions.
Well, like he had four of all of last year, and he nearly matched that in one game against the Lions.
Yeah, yeah, no, he doesn't throw those types of things. And yeah, the Bakhtiari pass. I mean, first of all, okay, he's got to hit him on that. But do you really want to have David Bakhtiari, who's now spent the last 2 years trying to get his knee right, going out on a pass pattern? Like, I don't even know if that makes any sense.
And that's the other concern. You talk about Mike McCarthy returning. Well, I think some Packers fans kind of wish that he was returning for good. I mean, I keep bringing this up a little bit. I feel like, you know, Matt LaFleur, I think, was more of a product of, I think he did some good things to kind of get this Packers team to where they're at. But I never felt, and you obviously voiced some concerns with him as well, I never felt that he was like this elite level coach, certainly not indicative of what his record was, which was three straight 13 win seasons, where it's like, wow, this guy's good. Well, based on what, though? I mean, he had a great quarterback. He had some great offensive weapons, but they came up short. They were kind of, to your point, that quote-unquote front-running team. And I see a guy who looks kind of lost right now, not knowing what the hell to do or how to fix it. And trust me, I watch the Buccaneers coaching staff a lot. I know inept coaching. So this kind of falls right under that same umbrella. And I ask you, how much of a problem is Matt LaFleur? And in hindsight, do you think that, you know, again, I think Mike McCarthy got a bad rep, being pushed out of town. I don't think he was a great coach, but I don't think he was as bad as some Packers fans wanted us to believe. And, you know, the narrative around him was that he held Aaron Rodgers back. Well, I don't know about that. I don't know about that because he seemed to, at the very least, be able to adjust in some instance. I don't see that with a Matt LaFleur-led team right now.
No, I think there's a couple of other issues as well in terms of coaching, right? So you've got Nathaniel Hackett, who was their offensive coordinator and really kind of a confidant of Aaron Rodgers, kind of like his best buddy because he made Aaron Rodgers laugh. Now he goes and becomes head coach in Denver. That's been a disaster. You replace him with Adam Stenovich, who was the offensive line coach. I'm never a big fan of promoting the offensive line coach to become the offensive coordinator. It's like two different skill sets, in my opinion. Meanwhile, Luke Getsy, who was the quarterback coach with Green Bay for the last 3 years, is now the offensive coordinator with the Bears. And look at what their offense has done. Justin Fields is improving. They're putting points on the board. They're taking advantage of whatever they have on offense. Maybe the right move would have been, once Nathaniel Hackett left to go to Denver, is that you offer Luke Getsy the offensive coordinator's position instead of Adam Stenovich. And again, maybe that would appease Aaron Rodgers because it was quarterback coach. I don't know. This almost seems like in Green Bay, and this is on Aaron Rodgers. He's not, you know, immune to criticism. It almost seems like that front office, like, they irritate him, right? Yeah. I mean, like, wasn't it a few years ago they let go of his quarterback coach without letting him know? Like, a quarterback at that level, I get you can't have run the whole organization. That doesn't necessarily work. But kind of, you know, maybe say, look, we're thinking of moving on from your quarterback coach. You know, are you going to have a problem with this? Like, communicate it. It really seems like there's a very, very contentious vibe between Mark Murphy, the president, and Brian Gutekunst, the general manager of the Packers, with Aaron Rodgers. It almost seems like they want to irritate the guy, right? Like, again,
it's like a second family for him.
Well, exactly, yeah. I can't even come back on that. Yeah, exactly. He doesn't speak to his family. He's probably not even talking to the general manager. Any of his players. But he's easy to get going in that direction, right? I mean, it's not like this is a guy who's going to stand there and you know, he's going to push back. I can't wait to see what he says tomorrow with McAfee. God knows what.
Well, and
yes, there's a couple of scotches in him. He might, you know, really let loose.
Well, and look, to, you know, in a kind of a serious, you know, all joking aside, kidding aside, I mean, I don't like to bring up outside drama because, again, I mean, what do we actually know? I mean, I'll say that there's similarities, maybe some communication skills that Aaron lacks. That could play a role in why maybe there's a disconnect between the front office and the coaching staff or whatever. And, you know, you've mentioned before a team without an owner too, you know, so there's really, I mean, there's accountability for sure. I mean, because again, it's run like many other businesses, presidents, all that stuff, CEO, but there's not that owner, you know, there's not the guy who like, you know, Robert Kraft, hey, Tommy, you know, let me call you up and, you know, let's hash things out. Let's settle. There's none of that. There's really just a and again, I'm not trying to absolve Aaron Rodgers from any sort of, you know, shortcomings that he's responsible for. No, I'm sure there's plenty of blame to go, you know, on both sides in this situation. But I just, right now in this moment for 2022, I think the Packers season is done. I don't see, I don't see any sort of saving grace. And at this point, you know, the one silver lining, the one thing they could possibly hang their hat on, a guy like Odell Beckham Jr., I don't think it's a possibility right now because he's not going to go to a team that's, you know, out of the race. If anything, John, and I know the Cowboys have been mentioned among it, with everything that happened yesterday, Tampa Bay might have emerged as maybe the most ideal landing spot for him. Because all of a sudden, you went from, you know, what's happening to this team. I mean, Mike Evans is banged up. He's dropping footballs. Julio Jones is, I mean, the guy's, I hate using the word washed because I feel like that has such a negative vibe to it. But, I mean, it's kind of where he's at right now. I think he's a very, very limited player. And I don't think you can count on him. In which case, and on top of that, Chris Godwin's lost a step. And it's not it may not be a permanent thing. I think it's more so recovering from a huge ACL injury that I think has kind of been forgotten. The guy is, you know, it takes a while to get back, but I've seen regularly, and maybe you can back me up on this, but I feel like he's, he just doesn't have that burst quite yet, you know, where it's like there's one play out to the flat. Where the ball was just kind of out of his reach. And he, you know what I mean? He didn't, you know, in a normal situation, a healthy Chris Godwin, that cuts a lot stronger and it's a lot harder and you're going a lot harder to the sideline. So that's not necessarily a long-term issue. It's just for right now, it might be an issue. So for Odell Beckham Jr., you're thinking, well, the Rams might have been another team that he was considering, you know, given his, you know, where he played before. But much like the Packers, I think their season is pretty close to over. Not quite, because they still are technically within the division race, but I think very obviously two teams are trending upwards in that division. The Rams are very much trending downward, and I think Arizona's just there. Like, I don't think they're going up. I don't think they're going down. I think they go up when they throw the ball to DeAndre Hopkins. But other than that, it's just it's still kind of a mess of a team. So for me, if I'm Odell Beckham Jr., you're looking at the Cowboys and you're looking at the Buccaneers.
And, yeah, those should be the two front runners. I mean, we'll always throw Kansas City and
With Kansas City going out and getting Kadarius Toney, I think that was their offseason mood. And I said it before too. I mean, we've seen this with the Patriots over the years. Teams like Kansas City, teams like New England, teams that are expected to be there each and every year, they're not making these, you know, huge moves. Now, again, him as a free agent's a little bit different, but I do get the feeling that Kansas City is content with what they have. And look, I mean, Kansas City, we'll talk a little bit about them here in a minute because, you know, obviously the AFC is, I think, very competitive, but I think, as crazy as it sounds, John, I feel like the waters are even muddier now. I don't think there's that massive separation between the top two teams as much as I think we thought there was. And we'll get to that.
Yeah, no. Absolutely. Because you look at Buffalo losing to the Jets, and the Jets have a legitimately good defense. Like, that's not made up. They've got talent all over the place, that defense. I thought they played really well against the Patriots 2 weeks ago. They did another nice job against Buffalo. Kansas City, their offense sometimes goes off the rails. I mean, they disappeared for about 2 hours last night in that game. It seemed like that missed extra point, like, changed the narrative of that game for some reason, right? Like, they were up 9-0, missed the extra point. It's like their offense kind of went to sleep. But, yeah, I mean, it is much more wide open. If I had a choice, I would like to see OBJ go to Dallas because I like seeing Dallas relevant. And there was a time where Jerry Jones would just get it done. Like, there would be no ands, ifs, or buts because he loves stars, literally. And it would get done. But I he's kind of backed off of that narrative. He's older. You would think as a guy is 80 that he's more desperate and says, well, you know, here's $10 million. Come join us.
Yeah, but I think players have a little bit more, I don't know. Like, I don't think that's necessarily as important. Cause, like, I think Odell Beckham Jr. is going to have options. Like, the difference between Jerry Jones and the Cowboys offering him money, it may not be, you know, it may be more than what, say, the Buccaneers have, but there's the Tom Brady factor. And as much as I think Dak Prescott's a fine quarterback, there's a history between those two players. And I'm talking about OBJ and Brady. And if there's ever a chance that they're ever going to play together, it might be that. And I think Odell Beckham Jr. values that because he's made a lot of money. He's going to make money regardless of where he signs. But you want to, you know, both teams will give him an opportunity, I think, to compete for a Super Bowl. I think, again, if the Buccaneers can commit to doing what they did in the final couple drives against the Rams, you know, being more pass-centric, and I know that sounds foolish when Tom Brady just threw 58 passes, but it's more or less about the timing, John. Like, yes, like, they've been throwing a lot, but, you know, the run-run-pass pattern was just so consistent yesterday up until towards the end or like towards the end of the first half too, because that's when they did the hurry up. You got to focus more on that. And if you do that, I think the Buccaneers are going to be fine regardless of injuries, but you add a guy like Odell Beckham Jr. to the mix. Now, all of a sudden that changes things quite a bit. And you're not saying, man, I really hope Julio Jones can come through, or man, I really hope Scotty Miller comes through this game. Although I liked what, you know, all that drop in the end zone aside, I like what he brought to the table. It kind of gave them a little bit different way of attacking, just like with Rashad White in the backfield as opposed to Leonard Fournette. So if I'm Odell Beckham Jr., I'm looking at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I'm looking at the Dallas Cowboys, and I'm saying, who do I want to play with? And there may not be a wrong answer. Again, I'm going to say he's probably going to lean towards Tom Brady just because it's Tom Brady. But, you know, going to Dallas wouldn't be he'd be more of the I don't know, more of a focus. Does that make sense? Would that make sense? Because, like, you know, again,
sure.
Yeah, I think
he'd be the number two guy. Yeah. He'd be the number two guy behind CeeDee Lamb, right? And it's Dallas. There's pressure wherever he goes because he's a huge name, right? But Tampa Bay at least won a Super Bowl 2 years ago, and the biggest star remains Tom Brady. The OBJ would kind of be co-billing with Dak Prescott as the biggest star, although I think Micah Parsons is their best player by far. Yeah. But, you know, we don't generally talk about pass rushers like we do quarterbacks. But, yeah, I'd like to see him go to either of those two places, and I'm sure he's going to go where he has the best chance to win again and maybe sign a long-term deal going forward. I just wonder what he's going to look like because this injury happened in February. This is a pretty quick turnaround as we're only in November right now. Does he come back the beginning of December, and exactly what is he at that point?
Yeah, and look, I mean, again, this isn't a – you know, a block. I mean, it could be. I mean, again, that's the gamble you take. I mean, you could bring him back and he could take a while to get going. And at which point, you know, it's just another body on the roster. And look, I mean, that could be the case, but I do think that he is a good enough player to maximize his potential. And by that, I mean, what capacity is he going to be at? Is he going to be 70%? Then I think he's going to maximize that 70%. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense, or am I just kind of
talking nonsense? No, I think he could, because that's what happened last year. I mean, he's coming back from injuries last year, right? Mm-hmm. And he got better every week with the Rams to the point where he was headed to be the MVP of the Super Bowl. I mean, if he doesn't blow out his knee, I thought he was the best player on the field or one of the best players on the field. Probably Aaron Donald or Von Miller would be in that discussion as well. But, yeah, he was playing at a very, very high level. So, and he's such a smart receiver and such a good route runner. Like, no one ever doubts his skill set. I even never doubt his commitment. I think he's a guy who, you know, when he's on the field, he's serious. And I think he works hard to get on the field through all these injuries. I like the player. you know. And obviously we know he idolizes Tom Brady like pretty much every player in the league. So I think that that would carry a lot of weight that he'd want to play with Brady and you know, win yet another Super Bowl.
Yeah, and look, I mean, we keep saying it about the Buccaneers. All they got to do is make the playoffs.
Yeah.
This isn't a team that has to win out, although, I mean, they're capable of doing that, and that's the thing. And, I mean, we haven't seen the ability to do that necessarily from this team. We've seen spur. I mean, again, if they can put their best defense and their best offense together, this team is a 7-win team right now. They just can't do it, and they haven't done that consistently. I personally believe it's a few tweaks in philosophy and game planning and how you attack each opponent and kind of the, you know, the overall philosophy. But to me, that's something that can be correctable. And then, again, you add a guy like Odell Beckham Jr. He's only going to help not only, you know, what he can do. Excuse me. I'm boring myself, apparently. No, I'm not.
Jeez, I'm
working on reducing my caffeine and coffee intake. So the last few days have been a little bit of a struggle trying to get through those first couple hours in the morning. So you have to bear with me.
Go with decaf. It has a little caffeine in it. And if, you know, a placebo, you still think you're getting any caffeine.
Yeah, I'm working on it. Little steps, baby steps. But sometimes it can be a struggle in the morning where I'm like, man, I'm tired. But that could also be because I've been up since about 4:30 this morning. Damn time change. It's killing me, John. It's killing me.
Oh, another person complaining about the
I love it. You know why? Because I live on the very edge of the Eastern time zone. So the sun still stays up past 5 o'clock here, and it's warm. So
it's already dark here.
Yeah, I was going to say this. The sun's probably setting right now already.
It's setting right now. Almost 10 o'clock in the morning it's setting. But yeah, the with us too, we're on the far eastern time of the eastern time zone. So yeah, we have a sunset now that's going to be about 4:15. But it actually feels like Tampa today. It's like 74 degrees.
Yeah, it's not. It's actually pretty nice out right now. So I'm enjoying that. So anyways, before we go, I will say that. We kind of mentioned it here a minute ago, the Buffalo losing to New York, the Chiefs kind of escaping the Titans. Like, I know the Chiefs won, but, you know, if you ask anyone but Chiefs fans, this team has, you know, its share of issues just like any other team in the NFL. If you ask Chiefs fans, it's the most perfect team that's ever been assembled, and they'll never lose to anyone because they're the greatest thing that's ever walked the earth. So somewhere in between, there's an overreaction to the Chiefs' success, and that comes long before you get to where Chiefs fans are. The reality of it is this team is just as flawed as just about every team in the league right now, including Buffalo, which over the last couple of weeks, I'm sitting here thinking like, man, we've been talking about Kansas City and Buffalo as like by far there's them and then everyone else in the AFC. I feel like that gap has significantly closed where it's, I still believe they're the two best teams in the AFC, don't get me wrong, but like if you're going to sit there and tell me in 3 weeks Miami might be better than them, I'm not going to argue that.
Miami beat Buffalo, didn't they?
Yeah.
A month and a half ago, Miami beat Buffalo.
And right now, based on the way Kansas City's defense is playing, I can't imagine that they'd, you know, be a sure thing to, you know, not be, you know, to hold off Miami in that offense, you know, which is basically their offense. Because that's where Tyreek Hill is. And again, as good as the Chiefs' offense has been, it's still missing that piece that really put them over the top and really made the difference between them and everyone else, and that was Tyreek Hill's ability to do absolutely whatever the hell he wanted, regardless of what was going on around him. And that's something that I think the Chiefs have done a very good job at minimizing the negative impact of not having that. But there's still times where, like you said earlier in the show, they were just non-existent on offense. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, you know, they're taking victory laps because Josh Allen threw two interceptions and he might have a damn elbow injury. But the reality of it is their offense hasn't been this juggernaut that they think it is. And they're just as flawed as everyone else in the AFC. So I'm looking at it as, yeah, Kansas City and Buffalo are probably still the two best teams in the AFC, but Tennessee, with even a healthy Ryan Tannehill, is a better team. I just, you know, Malik Willis, he's a couple starts. I mean, you can't really, you know, expect him to you know, elevate your team, but they nearly beat this Kansas City juggernaut yesterday without A.J. Brown, obviously. They don't have him anymore. Without Ryan Tannehill and with a rookie quarterback and basically the, you know, beast of a running back in Derrick Henry. So they're vulnerable. So I'm looking at the AFC and I'm like, yeah, I still think it's the deeper of the two conferences, but I don't think the difference is that negligible. And if you're going to ask me, and we're going to do our top five teams later in the week on the Full Press NFL podcast, you may very well see Philadelphia clear both of those teams. And I think maybe we're maybe a little late to the party in accepting that, because we just bought into this idea that Buffalo and Kansas City were these, you know, above all else juggernaut teams. And look, I chalked up some of Buffalo's, you know, struggles to being bored, but look, you don't be bored 2 weeks in a row. Okay. That's a sign of, no, there might be actually some issues there. So I'm looking and I'm saying, well, the AFC is wide open. And I couldn't tell you. I mean, Tennessee could very well end up with the one seed again. I mean, it could be Buffalo. It could be Kansas City. I don't really know. But I'm not going to bet my house on any of those teams winning every single game in the postseason, because I really don't know. I think, again, the talent discrepancy is just not what I think a lot of people assumed it was.
No, I think there's nine teams fighting for seven slots in the AFC, right? Like, all four teams in the AFC East are still very much alive for a playoff spot. Cincy and Baltimore in the North. Tennessee's going to run away with the South since Indianapolis is in tank mode at this point. Obviously, Kansas City. The Chargers found a way to win yesterday, so they're 5-3. That's never pretty, but 5-3 is 5-3. Denver's kind of the one team I'm not sure. You know, they could get hot because their defense is so darn good, but their offense is awful. But I think there's nine teams fighting for seven slots in the AFC. And we mentioned Miami. Miami's 6-1 with Tua. And the only game they lost that Tua started, he didn't finish. And it was a close game at Cincinnati when he got concussed. I mean, he's playing at an MVP level. He's leading the league in passer rating and QBR. Like, I mean, that doesn't make him the best quarterback in football. I get that. But you got to give him a lot of credit. I've never been a big Tua fan. But, man, he's playing at a high level.
I mean, he's certainly changed my opinion of him so far. I mean, I was a little harsh on him to begin with, but the proof is in what we're seeing. So,
Tyreek Hill does help offenses, right?
Yeah.
We can agree on that?
Oh, sure. Sure, absolutely. And look, man. I mean, that's the thing, though, and this is where I get, like, kind of, this is where my brain does not compute sometimes, and I kind of get so fed up with the online discourse, and that is, well, you know, again, we talk about Patrick Mahomes and how he's being praised as the GOAT incarnate, you know, like he's on, you know, he's on his way, he does things that no one else does. Well, he also, again, started his career with a pretty nice safety net in Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, and we're seeing the type of impact a guy like Tyreek Hill, along with other players, obviously Miami's not short of talent, but neither was Kansas City. You know, at one point they had Kareem Hunt too. So it's like, you know, it's there's a reason. Like, yes, he's a great young quarterback, and I'm talking about Patrick Mahomes. But the insistence on not just Kansas City Chiefs fans, but we see it in media. You know, some of the people that kind of just go overboard to the insistence on just ignoring everything else around. So, like, yeah, you can sit here and praise at some of the great things that Patrick Mahomes does. No doubt about it. I mean, he's a great young quarterback. I've never said otherwise. But to sit there and pretend like he's doing things that no one else does, and I'm like, okay, guys, now you're just blatantly ignoring, like, the very long history of the NFL, and in some cases, ignoring what we've seen even earlier that day. I remember at some point last year, there was a big hoopla about a pass that Patrick Mahomes made, and there was, like, two or three instances of that happening that week that no one talked about. But it was all, oh, Patrick Mahomes this, and now we're seeing Tua do a lot of the things and run an offense that was very similar to what Kansas City was in 2018 when, guess what, Patrick Mahomes won an MVP. And, you know, there was a big reason for that because, well, you know, they were constantly leading the league in yards after the catch and there were, you know, big play receivers, all that stuff. So it'll be interesting to see how this unfolds over the next couple weeks. Obviously, much better for Kansas City, having won that game, ultimately won that game last night. But if you're a Chiefs fan, I'm not necessarily coming away from that feeling like, oh yeah, we've made a big step to get over the Buffalo Bills, because I think they're, again, I think there's a lot of good teams in the AFC. I'm not quite sure how it's going to shake out at this point.
Yeah, no, and then again, we got a half a season left. There's players coming back from injuries. There may be other players that get injured. That's going to detail a lot. And look at Buffalo now. We got to see what happens with Josh Allen, who appeared to hurt his elbow yesterday. So, you know, you get a quarterback that runs a lot. That's potentially going to happen, although it appears that that injury was sustained while he was throwing a pass in the pocket. So, yeah, there's so much that's going to happen over the next 2 months. Who gets hot, who gets cold, who gets healthy, who gets injured. I know those are all cliches. Sounds like something out of a fortune cookie, but that's basically the way the league works, because it's a long, long ride. And here we are at midseason. And you know, the one certain seems to be that Philadelphia every week is going to play at a very high level.
Yeah.
So you got to give them credit.
And that's why they're probably the best team in the NFL. But
yeah,
tune in Wednesday on a new episode of Full Press NFL Podcast to find out if both John and I agree on that. So shameless little plug, but, you know, I've been doing this for a while. I know what it takes to shamelessly plug other things that I'm doing. So that's going to do it for us here today. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Full Press NFL. And, of course, go over to fullpresscoverage.com and check out all the great, great content over there. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in, and we will talk to you tomorrow.